we have to go on the air now. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. It is the 19th of May. It is a drizzly gray day, but it is a little chilly out too, but that's supposed to change. And we'll hit our first 90-degree day here, I believe, over the weekend, which is first of the year anyway, and that'll be something.
I had one 90-degree day when I was in California a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
I didn't like it.
Yeah. No. I don't know. You know, it's weird around here, of course, but we had a very cool and even chilly spring. So, you know, now you go right into summer, but no sense complaining, but we will enjoy the rain. We'll enjoy all it brings us, and we'll talk about all things roundtable panelish this morning. We have a great group to do it with. Let me introduce them. We also welcome you to be a part of our program, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, good morning.
Good morning. You survived
not only the media project taping, but your walk in the rain. So
in the rain.
Good to have you here.
Yeah, in the rain. And I must say, there is something to be said for complaining. You said no use complaining. I, on the other hand, find it to be very helpful to be able to complain about all sorts
of things. Cathartic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chartokic.
Well, add that to the lexicon. That's a good one. We welcome publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld. Good morning, Ira. How are you,
sir? Good morning, Joe and everyone. Nice to be back. Try to think of something cute to say before the next 2.5 hours is up.
All right. We'll start working on it.
Cute, yeah. Cute. I like those cute things.
Like
yeah.
It was a David Mamet movie, Heist, and he says, cute as a barrel of kittens.
Well, what happened to him?
Very odd. He's become apparently a Trumper.
Yeah. And he's been writing all of these very conservative manuals and taking his own business to task.
He's a brilliant screenplayer and playwright, and very strange.
Yeah, and they're kind of scratching their head wondering why nobody's seeing the new version of American Buffalo,
right.
And it's because, well, you know, I don't think you tick off the Broadway community.
No.
I did not know this.
You got to look into
what
it.
What is it that turns people into Trumpers? I mean, Ted Cruz is another one. How did that happen?
Mamet lived in Vermont for a really long time. He was obviously a New Yorker, but lived in Vermont. And then, I don't know what happened there, but then moved to California and just started writing all of this stuff, which was very... very conservative and very...
it's a cult.
Very Trumpy. The voice you hear right now is Rosemary Arameo, investigative journalist. Good morning.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And on the telephone, we have research professor and Stuart Rice Honorary Chair at the University of Massachusetts Amherst College of Information and Computer Sciences. Deep breath. And faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Fran Berman, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. You should just say, she's an okay dude. I would like to say hi to everybody, of course, and extend my hearty and heartfelt congratulations to the U.S. Soccer Federation,
yay,
who just agreed to guarantee equal pay to women. So, way to go, U.S. Soccer Federation.
You know, it is it's a great story. It's a fantastic story about, I was going to say, you know, about damn time, but
it's about damn time.
This labor agreement with members of the men's and women's national teams will include higher paychecks and shared World Cup prize money. And as the women's soccer stars stared at their laptop screens Monday night and the new labor deal was explained to them, the numbers just kept climbing. A few thousand dollars here, tens of thousand dollars there. Pretty soon the figures had crossed into the millions. What they added up to, the players all knew, was something many of them had chased for most of their careers, equal pay.
Cool.
Why do you think that was so elusive for so long, Fran?
Misogyny.
Oh, geez. Why is it elusive everywhere? I mean, really, why is it elusive everywhere? I mean, there are very few jobs, you know, that require us to check, you know, how many X chromosomes we have, really. And so why don't we just do the job and get the pay? This is the, you know, gazillion dollar question.
Let me give the audience and the group here something to ponder and then put me down immediately. I'll start by saying I'm very much in favor of equal pay. Let there be no mistake. I could make the case, I think, in relation to the soccer men and women, that the women ought to be paid more than the men, because the women generate more revenue. They play to larger crowds than do the men. Should that not be, if it was in the reverse, if the women were drawing 10,000 fans to games and the men were drawing 60,000, should the pay have been equal? Should the players in the WNBA make the same kind of money that the NBA players make? Now, as again, I'll start from where I started, so there's no mistaking. I believe in equal pay for equal work. But I wonder if it's a little bit more convoluted than what's been projected.
Well, Ira, I have to say I have a question for you, and you're the ex-sports guy, you know, right?
I've been removed from that quite a few years.
Yeah, but you know, once it's like riding a horse, you know, you never get really off of it. So
you never get off the horse? What?
I think you get it, Rosemary.
Makes it harder.
I think you get it, Rosemary.
Mixed a metaphor.
Once a sports writer. Always a
job.
Okay, so here is the question, Ira. You say that more people come out to see the women than the men in this case.
It's my understanding that that's the case.
I wonder why that is. Do you know?
Well, I think they're good, and
yes.
they have
the
good
men
teams.
Are no good.
Well, no, I think, I mean, people, like, more people watch baseball games of teams that are in the lead than
yeah,
they do.
I think young girls who were starting to play had finally had role models, and it really was a groundswell from young kids. You go to a women's soccer game or see one on TV, and you see so many thousands of young kids and young girls in the stands. So I think that that's part of it.
I've never quite understood the soccer phenomena in the United States. All our kids, kids play soccer, you know, and there's some little league and stuff, but soccer is very big. But then when they're grown up, you don't see as much soccer.
It's changing. It's taken forever. But that the prediction that soccer was going to be the next great sport in this country goes back decades and has not proven to be true. But it has become more popular, and the way you can determine that, I think, beyond crowd size is how much TV time is devoted to the Premier and other European soccer leagues that don't have American participants.
Well, you know, back to Joe's question, and I'll give you a less heartfelt answer to it, is I think a lot of times our pay is based on perceived economic value versus fairness. So by any fairness criteria, you know, why would you take a giant group of people and decide to pay them more than some other giant group of people, no matter what their qualifications? I mean, that's kind of ridiculous, and it does not pass the fairness test. But there's lots of weird things that pass the perceived economic value test. You know, we pay swim instructors, who arguably help save people's lives, much less than any given Kardashian or relative of a Kardashian in this country. We pay surgeons, who we pay a lot, by the way, less than anybody, you know, running a Silicon Valley, you know, big Silicon Valley company. And so, you know, if you think about their perceived public value versus their perceived economic value, you know, that's kind of how things go out. But you can still be happy about women's soccer.
No,
for
but
sure.
I, for sure. I agree, but I think Ira makes a really good point that should there be, if there's not increased pay for the women because they have more fans and arguably then they're selling more jerseys and they're getting more people in the stands and it's making more money, that they either get a cut of that or bonuses from that, mm-hmm. And I know that's another fight to start with U.S. soccer, but it just it does seem to make sense. I remember when this goes back many years. You probably be the only one who will be with me in remembering this, but when the stars of Friends, mm-hmm. When they were renegotiating their contracts, the men were making much more than the women were, which made the women very mad, mm-hmm. not surprisingly. And what the six actors said is, okay, we're going to negotiate our contracts all for one, one for all. You
pay us all the same.
You're going to pay us all the same per episode. You do everything. And we all make the same amount of money as far as bonuses that go around by ad revenue and so forth. And that goes back years, but that's still extremely rare.
Yeah, Seinfeld had the same kind of negotiation. They all went in together. Well, the women's soccer team players are happy with this, and so maybe my premise is inaccurate. So if they're happy, I'm happy. But I do think if it has to do with the amount of revenue coming in, that does not seem to me to be an unfair measurement on how an individual is being paid.
Well, the only problem with that is that, for example, men's golf is more popular than women's golf, but it's also more promoted, more pushed. It makes more money because it's advertised more. There's just a disadvantage in how in everything and how schools recruit. So Title IX has helped.
Well, there's also a darker reason. I mean, we're sort of off on a big tangent here, but there's a darker reason for it. The women's golf tour now is dominated by Asian women, and they're I don't believe
discrimination.
You don't see a lot of Americans among the leaders. There are some, and I think that has hurt the viewership because the average fan is unable to distinguish them from the, It's hard. It's sad
Yikes.
To say that. Yeah, it's not like they all look alike, but all of the names they're just foreign, and I think that's hurt the women's game.
It hasn't hurt soccer. All the names there are foreign too.
From other countries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to side with Alan on some of this because I don't. Like U.S. soccer, I get, and that's good. And women's soccer, I do watch, but the whole phenomenon of like worldwide soccer and mm-hmm. FIFA and all of that, I really don't quite understand. But mm-hmm. I'm glad it exists. I'm glad it makes people happy.
You're talking about FIFA?
Yeah.
Yeah. FIFA may be the second most. What's the word I'm looking for?
Corrupt.
Corrupt.
right there next to the Olympic.
Big investigative reporting out of England about FIFA.
Yeah. Well,
have we gone off on a tangent?
Yeah, I think I've generated enough letters this morning.
We had it on our.
I didn't mean to hijack the show, but I was so excited with, often I look and I think, what's the good news today? And it's very hard on many days to find what the good news is. But I thought this was a piece of good news, so apologies for hijacking things.
Well, it's already been established that I can bring a show down in about 3 seconds.
On the contrary, Ira. On the contrary, you have raised a very important point. And, I think the kinds of things we talk about here sometimes are led by our instincts as to what people want to hear. And if they want to hear about their kids and soccer and all the rest and men and women in sports, I think it's great.
Well, and it's also, I think Fran's right. It is nice to start off the show with a story that is
good news. Good
misleading, news. But nice. There's not a lot of good news. Why are we leading with that? But
no, I understand. But give us one day. It's 15 minutes. Come on.
All right.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get to all the crappy news that Rosemary wants to talk about, and we'll get to that in mere moments. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we will continue our conversation with Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Fran Berman. All of that and much more coming up. First news. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning, 34 minutes past 9 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Fran Berman, and Ira Fussfeld making up the panel. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. some quick notes about soccer, and then we'll move on to other news of the day. Vincent says, simple pay to equal pay. A simple answer to equal pay. Any business or organization that can get away with paying less will. The status quo of paying women less continues because those who do can. Then, the women have won the World Cup 4 times. The men have never won the World Cup and likely never will. The women should be paid more. And we go to Raymond. I thought that the reason the pay was different was because the women's team negotiated a contract that guaranteed certain benefits like more paid time off, more maternity time, and specifically did not include a cut of the profits because they wanted security and less risk. The man's contract was all about more risk, but also more return. Am I wrong about that? I don't know.
That's two I don't knows.
Ira? I don't know, but I can't imagine that anybody wants to negotiate a contract where they get less money. Just saying.
I think you're right. Let's see. We go to this letter from Barbara. This is not just about pay. It's about hotels, even food provided, and training facilities. It's about how women are treated. That from Barbara. Thank you very much. Also, we are reminded today that it is Ray Graff's birthday today.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know Ray Graff had birthday.
Happy birthday.
So we wish, we have a listener who wrote us a letter and wants us to wish Ray a happy birthday.
I'm sure that what would make Ray really happy is when Max Scherzer gets out of the MRI tube this morning, they say he's just twinked something and he won't miss a
start. Yeah.
Well, there is nobody.
Do we know if is it a decadal birthday or just a normal birthday?
I think it's a normal birthday. I'm not absolutely sure on that, but I think it's a normal birthday.
I think we should tell people out there that some of our secrets. One of them is he has a nickname, and his nickname is Uncle Grumpy. but there is nobody more popular in this building than Ray Graff. So happy birthday, Ray.
All right, let's go to other stuff, and we'll start the show now, 37 minutes in.
I know.
Okay, here we go.
New record.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. It's not your fault, Fred. We go to, now, where do I want to go? Let's see. Let's start with, do you want to do Formula or do you want to do Buffalo?
Formula.
Okay. So the defense, I always love when I ask that question because Rosemary is the first one to answer. It's good. So I looked at her.
I ain't crossing her.
President invoked the defense. Well, I did have it at the top, but I was just checking.
Yeah, let's make the record clear that Rosemary and I are paid the same amount of money to be on this program.
President Biden took urgent action on Wednesday to address the nationwide baby formula shortage, invoking the Defense Production Act to increase its production, creating Operation Fly Formula to deploy Defense Department planes and speed formula shipments into the United States from overseas. The move, Mr. Biden's first major initiative to respond to a crisis that has sown fear and frustration among parents across the country and prompted Republicans and Democrats alike to demand immediate action. His decision came as the formula shortage was threatening to become a political as well as public health disaster for the administration. And on the eve of the first congressional hearing with Dr. Robert Califf, the head of the Food and Drug Administration, to delve into how it happened and what is being done to respond. The White House announced its plan only hours before the House took action of its own, approving an emergency infusion of $28 million for the Food and Drug Administration and a bill to loosen restrictions on what kind of formula can be purchased through the federal food and the food aid program for women and babies. Under the plan that the White House put forward on Wednesday evening, government agencies could apply to use commercial aircraft owned by the Defense Department to pick up infant formula from overseas and fly it into the United States, getting it onto shelves more quickly. On Monday, the FDA announced that it would streamline approval so that more overseas companies could make such shipments. The Defense Department will also use its contracts with commercial air cargo lines to transport formula products from abroad, bypassing regular air freight routes to speed up importation and distribution, as the administration did with medical material during the early months of the coronavirus pandemic. Final paragraph on this. Last week, Mr. Biden said the infant formula crisis was his highest priority and promised that parents would see more product on the shelves within weeks or less.
Did you ever think you'd be talking about a shortage of baby formula in this country?
No.
Listen, I don't think this is another one of these things where I don't think you can blame Biden for the problem, although his opponents and politically
he's going to get blamed.
He'll get blamed. But I don't think it's unfair to ask the question, what has taken him so long to get to the point where they did what Joe just described? Is this not something that they should have anticipated? I don't know. Pick a time frame. Months ago, as I understand it, the two major reasons for this are supply chain issues, and we know there have been a myriad of them, and there was a recall on a formula in one of the producers, thus lessening the number of the supply that's out there. But I just wonder what took them so long to do what he did yesterday.
Okay, so this is a business a formula, and obviously this whole crisis has pointed out that maybe we need more people involved in it for competition. But Abbott in February has this problem, announces a recall, and they find a contaminant, a deadly bacteria in their machinery. It is killing babies. So the fact that now they're saying, okay, we're going to get this fixed right away makes me very nervous. What are they doing that they haven't done since February to clean up their machinery to get rid of the contamination? And the problem with getting formula from overseas is if you transport and it takes a certain amount of time, it also is contaminated. Babies will die. So this is not something that should have been handled. Why is the government involved in it? It's a private business. Why isn't business taking care of it? They're not making money. This is in America, supposedly, we don't like government involved in private business. Of course, I think he's doing totally the right thing now. His dedication is to helping common people, working class people, live their lives. And not having formula for your baby is a really big problem. Breastfeeding, as some very crass people saying, oh, just breastfeed. That's not a possibility for many, many women who have to work, who have sure. health issues. It's awful to breastfeed. So he is right to get involved. I hate that he's been blamed for it. And I think this is a bold move. I hope that somebody goes after Abbott. What happened? How did this happen? If your business is making baby food, aren't you required? Isn't it really important not to have contaminant in your factory? And we just seem to be forgiving that.
You know,
like it's Biden's fault.
You know, Rosemary, I've been around politicians a good deal of my life, and I've watched what motivates them to do anything. And there is nothing like a major story in the New York Times that will get people really busy on this kind of thing. And then the other question that comes is, overseas, what are we doing here? I mean, why isn't this product coming from the richest, most wealthy? And
I agree. Yeah. This is a private industry issue. And so all the people who don't want the government involved in business on anything else but baby formula, why is Biden getting it now? I also love that he's using the Defense Act here, the Defense Production Act here, which Trump didn't even use to save Americans from dying of COVID. Biden is using the mechanisms that are provided in government to help people.
Well, but aren't there any number of examples of government having to get involved with the private industry, or the airline
sure.
industry is one that immediately comes to mind.
They should get more involved.
But in terms of, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm coming down on Biden because I don't. He's got enough problems without me saying so on the radio. But when Abbott was having its problems leading to the recall and to the deaths. And the lesser supply, as then the supply chain problems that have already been involved, we're already aware of, should they have not anticipated this a lot earlier? It's a health emergency.
It's less than 3 months. I mean, when should they have anticipated it? Did you think Abbott would go 3 months without being able to produce the product that they sell for profit?
Well, what we don't know is, did somebody from the administration or from the FDA call Abbott and ask them how long you're going to be?
It's another way of looking at this. And again, I want to go back to my experience with politicians. And that is that when a politician sees a story in a newspaper, that becomes the motivator.
Yeah.
You know, Fran? I just feel like I just feel this just makes me sad. And of course, you know, it being about baby formula really heightens everybody's everything.
Sure.
And,
yes.
And, you know, I don't think breastfeeding is bad, by the way. I breastfed, you know, my kids and, you know, it was what it was. But as Rosemary points out, you know, people work or there's health reasons or, you know, whatever reasons. So formula is sort of an important part of the mix. But, you know, take the baby formula part out of it. This really highlights so many ways in which, you know, our system is strained or broken. You know, there are commerce issues. So the Sturgis plant, I suppose, was closed. There were recalls. You know, there were issues in the way the baby formula is made. Arguably, this is a product that is, you know, legitimately in the public interest. And so perhaps we should have stronger standards. Abbott itself is very market dominant. And so, you know, once Abbott produces less baby formula, it's really serious. That's something to look at. And in fact, it's been difficult for foreign manufacturers to really develop a big market in the U.S. And so now Biden has to do a bunch of stuff to get them over here in an unusual way and not just the way of regular commerce. It focuses, you know, and that focuses on, you know, how nationalistic should we be? Aren't we part of a global economy and how do these things work? I mean, the other thing that's really tragic about this is like so many things, you know, it heightens the lack of fairness in opportunity and the disparity of culture. If you think about the economic issues, about how baby formula gets distributed, and there's this WIC program that the government has that allows discounts for it, it's disparities on different cultures and different peoples and the opportunity of whether you can get baby formula or not. So, you know, it's sort of a whole ball of wax that we see in so many other kinds of products and services, you know, now in this space. And, you know, I have to say that Biden is in, as we all know, you know, a highly influential position. But, you know, what's wrong with America is not something that, you know, one guy can fix or one administration can fix.
We have a tendency to say anything that's a problem is complicated. And I think you've made it way more complicated than it is. Supply side problems were not an issue when Abbott was up and running. Abbott failed. And we have no competition. If I were at Nestle, I'd be saying, hey, we should get into baby food formula. They could do it and they used to. And it's because they dropped out that suddenly there's a big issue. And I think people out to blame Biden have turned it into something way more than it is. This is lack of competition.
Well, except that it happened on his watch.
Respectfully, Rosemary, I disagree with you. I think a lot of these problems are really, really, really complicated. And if we try to solve them just focusing on one thing without this sense about the environment in which we have to do that thing, then I don't think we get the best solution. And so in this case, you know, he's trying to solve this problem. This problem is there's like not enough baby formula. And, you know, he has to push on a lot of stuff. He has to push on Abbott. He has to push on commerce. He has to push on, international trade. He has to push on the standards and the science. And if he just pushes on, you know, he has to push on which communities actually get this. And if he just pushes on one thing, he doesn't solve his problem.
Look, we know that Biden is, or any sitting president is going to be criticized for virtually everything that happens in this country that's negative, fairly or unfairly. But I do wonder, and perhaps it was done. We don't know the inner workings. But was there ever a cabinet meeting or a staff meeting, or did Biden happen to look in the Washington Post and see that this issue was brewing, and did he not say to Ron Klain, the chief of staff, get me an answer to this? Is this going to be a problem? Rosemary points out it was 3 months ago, but I would have asked that question as soon as I read about the problem. Is this something I have to worry about? I've got plenty other on my plate.
I need a break from war in Ukraine and inflation, so can we talk about baby formula? all the people who talk about government not getting involved in private business, this seems like totally one of those issues, and I cannot blame him for that. And friend, your pushback is right, and I understand the points. I think they're valid. However, it's really easy to say, oh, it's real complicated, we can't deal with it. And I think that happens way too much in this country.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't saying the last part, because I do think the fact that things are complicated does not mean that we shouldn't try.
Correct.
Okay, so I have to tell you, Rosemary, one of my favorite lines, this is like so totally a non sequitur, but one of my favorite lines in this this great old movie, Searching for Bobby Fischer. Did you ever see it?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so you remember there's like the kid who's a chess prodigy, and he loves to play in Central Park. He loves to play. And now they have, you know, like real instruction, and these people are, you know, trying to groom him to be a chess guy. And but the kid gets great joy in, like, hanging out in Central Park and playing with his friends. And the chess teacher says to the mom, you know, I'm sorry, he shouldn't play in Central Park anymore. It makes my job harder. And the mom looks at him and she says, so it's hard. You know, and I think that's the answer. You know, yeah, it's complicated, but so it's complicated. You know, this is like a real-life problem, and we still have to solve it.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get to some of the letters on this. We'll move on to other topics as well. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Try that again. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Very nice to have you with us. I thank you very much for being here. We have some letters. Letters on this subject. So we'll get to those and then we'll move on to other things. Our country has become dominated by monopolies, writes Des. I thought the U.S. put in laws to stop this back in the 1910s. We are right back to where we started, fighting for unions and breaking up these monopolies that are killing the classes from middle on down. To say our government is failing the general public is an understatement. Then we go to Earl. When it comes to food processing, the FDA is required to provide federal inspection on site. The feds are already involved in food production. Were the inspectors lax? Would Abbott have identified the problem without those inspectors?
Right.
Complicated and probably unknowable. Then we go to Diane.
I don't think that's true. I think these things are knowable, but you've got to investigate them. I mean, that's why we have congressional investigations and other things. You get a big problem and somebody wants to know what happened. And I think there are answers to what happened.
Sandy says breastfeeding is bad. Rosemary needs to take back that comment.
Come on, Rosemary did not say that.
She did not.
I tried to breastfeed. I could not. I just didn't have enough milk. My baby was hungry, and we went to formula. That happens to a lot of women. If you work and you can't or don't want to pump, you cannot breastfeed. It is not a universal answer. It works for many women and many children. I never said it was bad, although the leche league's a little crazy. They make you feel guilty if you don't breastfeed.
It's the most natural way to feed the baby, says Sandy, and the best nutrition for the infant and is good for the mom, helps her get weight off. I needed to use formula to supplement. But everyone breastfeeding is not bad.
Is that Sandy, the president of the Leche League, writing to us?
Tell us what
now,
you really mean.
Now.
Did anybody in this room ever say that breastfeeding was bad?
No,
they didn't. And what we are saying is that choice is very good for women. Reproductive freedom, including how you feed your baby, is important.
Absolutely.
Diane writes, Rosemary, don't speak negatively about breastfeeding your baby. It can be a wonderful experience.
Rosemary, you're in trouble now, girl.
I know.
I will take these on. These are breastfeeding warriors. They're crazy.
I didn't even pick up. I didn't hear you say that.
I said that the critics or some critics of Biden are saying, oh, just breastfeed. Like, that's an answer. And it is not for everyone.
That's
for many.
I was a working mom, and for both my children and breastfed each for the first year. It takes some trial and learning techniques, but can be very rewarding while providing the best food for your baby. Then we go to this letter from Linda concerning baby formula and breastfeeding. I agree with everything Rosemary said. Except when she said breastfeeding is horrible.
I didn't say that.
No, hold on. She makes I agree
with her. I want to hear the transcripts.
She said, I agree with her in that breastfeeding is not the answer to the issue and not for everyone, but I'd like to state that many women find breastfeeding wonderful. So she's looking at it from the point of the mother and the bond with the child.
I would just like to say that in my many, certainly not as many as the rest of you, but in my many hours on Roundtable, this is the first time we have basically spent the first hour on issues that really target women. Equal pay, breastfeeding, baby formula. These are, you know, it's kind of a nice roundtable. Sorry, except that nobody should be, like, so mad at Rosemary.
I don't care.
No, on the contrary, I think you encourage it sometimes, but it's not fair to falsely accuse you. And yeah, that's what.
But isn't it interesting that the three letters that you wrote heard the same thing that you didn't say?
I know it is. It's because breastfeeding advocates are so sensitized to being criticized. I actually do happen to think it's horrible. My own experience was horrible, but I would never say that because I don't want letters like this, and I get them anyway.
And I may point out, you just said it.
I did.
This may be something that some of our male listeners really don't know about, but there are what should we say, preferences in the community about, and they vary, about, you know, how long you breastfeed, you know, how much you breastfeed, you know, whether it's okay to breastfeed and provide formula at the same time. People have strong opinions about that.
Yeah, they really
and,
do.
You know, I breastfeed my kids. I also gave them formula at various points. You know, these are kind of individual choices, but a lot of people want to weigh in on how you make those choices, which, like, if you don't know that, might surprise you.
A lot of people do want to weigh in. Three quick letters, and then we'll go to a break. Phyllis says, okay, you're okay. You're off the hook, Rosemary. Phyllis says, the United States does not make breastfeeding easy. 31 Republicans voted against the Pump Act, guaranteeing an ability to pump at work. Many women who want to breastfeed cannot for controllable reasons. Perhaps this emergency will raise awareness of this awful emergency. Perhaps there would not be a baby formula shortage if every woman who wants to breastfeed was supported by her community. Then we go to Paul, who says, why wasn't this reported on sooner? And then we go to Kenny, who says, isn't this a socialist move where the government controls the means of production? Has capitalism and free enterprise failed in this case?
That's my point. Capitalism would be an answer. There was more competition than Abbott dropping out would make an opportunity for other private companies.
But is there not a time when it is appropriate for government to jump in?
Oh, they have to now. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many other topics to discuss. We'll do just that in just a moment. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion for this morning. It is Thursday, the 19th of May, and it's a great pleasure to have you with us. We thank you. Let us get to some other topics, and we welcome your letters on those. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so Biden's Justice Department pressed for strong response regarding the shooting in Buffalo. Attorney General Merrick Garland has been talking with civil rights leaders as his agency launches a hate crimes probe. The day after a gunman killed 10 black people in a Buffalo grocery store, Damon Hewitt's phone rang. On the line was Attorney General Merrick Garland. Garland was contacting civil rights leaders to reinforce his pledge that the Justice Department would pursue hate crime investigations. Hewitt, the president of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, did not mince words. What is needed to combat domestic extremism and racist violence, he told Garland, is a Marshall Plan-style approach to galvanize federal attention and resources. To what degree is the federal apparatus able to and interested in protecting black people? Hewitt said in an interview recounting his conversation from Sunday. This is, once again, a test. Investigators from the FBI, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, and the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division are combing through evidence in Buffalo and online to piece together the scope of the mass shooting and the motivation for it. 18-year-old Peyton Gendron has pleaded guilty to state charges of first-degree murder. He is scheduled to appear in court this morning. Though justice officials will collaborate with and assist local authorities, federal prosecutors are also conducting a parallel investigation to determine whether to charge Gendron with a hate crime, a prospect that could add significant punishment, including the death penalty, legal experts said. I am not a legal expert. How does this not qualify as a hate crime?
It is a hate crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a hate crime. I like that the federal government is mobilizing. I like that Merrick Garland is acting a lot faster on this than he seems to be against high-level corruption and connected to January 6th. I do have some questions, and it's mostly not of the sort of disapproving, but just because I don't know, when the government spends money on prosecutions that simply repeat what's already happened at the state level. We saw that with the killing of the jogger down in the South. Remember that one? After the state had found two men guilty, sent them
Martin
to death. Yes, exactly. The feds went after them.
The jogger was a different one.
The jogger was a different one. They, remember the two men in the pickup truck? I can't remember the names. I'm so sorry. But they beat him up and killed him. And they were found guilty, and then the feds went after them at hate crime, and it ended up being, you know, okay, well, you already have life in prison. There's nothing more to add. So I'm not sure that how that works or why that's important, but any attention on hate crimes as an insidious problem and domestic terrorism as a problem in this country is probably a good thing.
Well, you know, I've been talking about, as have many, I didn't invent it, that this country has been in a cold civil war for a long time. It's almost, I'm just about ready to say this is a real civil war, that there are just too many instances of these mass shootings, whether the motivation is racism, whether the motivation is white supremacy, you take your pick. These are people who are resorting to violence to, I presume, to try to get their point of view across and to sway people to join their point of view and change the face of this country or change the future of this country. And I don't know that you can separate hate crime now from something larger. I mean, this is not, I don't know that if there is a real civil war, heaven forbid, in this country, I don't know that it'll be the Confederate Army versus the Union Army. But it's going to be more of the Timothy McVeighs and the Gendrons and some of these other guys who are out there shooting, and at some point probably women. January 6th fits in this. I'm very pessimistic about this, and I don't know what the answer is, because it's too easy for somebody 18 or older or maybe even younger, like what's his name in Rittenhouse, is that?
Yeah, Rittenhouse. Kyle
to get
Rittenhouse.
To get a gun and to create mayhem, and you can't. The government can't be everywhere to stop them, and heaven knows how many they have in fact been able to stop. It's much like terrorism.
But Ira, you can try.
You have to.
You
try.
Can try, and you can put the word out that you are looking to put a stop to this nonsense and nonsensical things that people on either side are doing, but certainly on the side that is opposed to any kind of racial justice.
Yeah. And I give Biden a lot of credit for the speech he gave in Buffalo. It was a good speech. Mm-hmm. And you know that the former President Trump would not have given any kind of a speech, much one like that, but he may not have gotten up at all. He needed to get up and say what he said to try to reach people who have saner heads and perhaps who are saying to themselves, yeah, I don't like the way things are going, but this is not the way we should be going.
Fran Berman.
You know, I want to get back to the Rosemary's and my spirited discussion before on, you know, it's complicated, because it was interesting to me that the suggestion was that there is really some sort of comprehensive kind of Marshall Plan to attack this. And
I mean, the Marshall Plan was primarily an economic rescue plan, but, you know, it had cultural and political and opportunity, you know, parts of it. And the suggestion is that it really look at attention and resources. But one question I ask myself, and I'm just thinking aloud, obviously, is if you look at these people that are doing these shootings, you know, what's the commonality, you know? Where did they fall in the educational system? Where did they fall in the resources? Where did they fall in the opportunity? You know, how did that help influence their views? You know, my community, the community of technology, has certainly exacerbated a lot of this. You know, are really pathetic, in my personal opinion. You know, controls on guns have really exacerbated a lot of this, but. You know, there's sort of bigger questions that we've been talking about all morning. You know, who gets equity? Who gets baby formula? Who gets guns? You know, it's this notion that you pick some things that are most important. Guns are among them, but maybe there are other things as well. And you create some sort of holistic plan and you stick to it and don't get distracted by the other really horrible things happening in the world. I think would be good because I think we treat there are so many of these, but we treat them as one-offs, you know, and now there's going to be a focus on, you know, this guy, Peyton Gendron, and there's going to be a focus on the victims, and there's going to be a focus on, you know, Buffalo. But the fact is, you know, this is a template that we've seen in many places around the country. And, you know, how can we kind of break that structure, you know, in a way that we can live in a more civilized world. And I don't know. I don't have any answers, you guys, but those are the things I think about.
I think you're right. Like it's a mistake to call these things one-offs because I believe they're connected.
Rosemary?
Well, they're all young white guys. There's one thing right there. You're not seeing women doing this. And the economically, I think the media has looked at them, and it's all over the place. So that doesn't seem to be an issue. Guns certainly are. And as for a Marshall Plan, there has not been one since World War II. It's another one of these times, Fran, where we're saying, oh, it's all complicated. We have to look at it holistically, which means we do nothing. And we have done nothing about this.
And yeah, I mean, the thing that discourages me the most, Rosemary, and I think I've said this a lot, although maybe not when you were on, is we just don't be able, you know, everybody is so concerned about winning being like the most important thing for every party, every person, it seems like everybody to me. And, you know, we've sort of lost any interest in the public interest, any interest in the right. long term, any interest in the things that don't pay off immediately. And I know that's a little bit over the top, but
I think you're right.
I used to think maybe I knew how to get there, and it's been a long time since I thought that.
I
just want to say that sure. Not only do I think you're right about losing sight of the public interest, but the concept of the public good seems to have disappeared too. We're now encouraged to look for ourselves, to do things that will help us or our immediate friends. That is tribalism, and we seem to be back into that. That's really a problem.
You know, I'm looking to the sociologists. You know, most colleges and universities have distinguished sociological groups of people who look at this kind of thing. And I'm looking at this post-Civil War division in this country between the people who were clearly, you know, racist and who have a conservative bent, and those of us who sit on the other side. And what is motivating, I'm always confused, although I have a few ideas, what is motivating the racist right-wing, often Republican, a group of people in this country that are doing what they're doing?
Well, I was going to ask a question. I don't have the answer, and maybe I should. But when you look at the number of politicians in this country, including Stefanik near in our region, who seem to be embracing this replacement theory, mm-hmm. Do they really believe there is something called a replacement theory, or are they just capitalizing on this wacky notion because it'll enable them, they believe, to get votes and then and get power? Is it at the end of the day, is it all about achieving power?
Well, we do know that she started as a moderate Republican.
Right.
And that she has shifted over to the Trumpian philosophy. So I would think it's the second rather than the first, Ira.
So you
okay, I'm going to say this, and I think that I will incur Alan's and everybody else's hate forever, but I'm willing to do it.
Wrath.
Just saying. You know, Republicans are not different species. You know, it's like we're all the same species, but I do think that in this day and age, that so many people, Republicans included, and many of the Republicans that are doing things that we don't like, and Democrats too, are feeling disenfranchised. You know, what do you do if you don't like something? How do you, like, make any kinds of change other than the things that make headlines? You know, who do you talk to? How do you make things, you know, better for yourself or your family, no matter what you believe? And I really think that... And this has all been exacerbated by my beloved technology. I think that, you know, these kind of dramatic, catastrophic, newsworthy things are the only way many people think that they can ease the things that they are worried about. And, you know, look what we've got. You know, is this really an okay way to be?
Well, I don't get what you're saying, to be fair. I think it's fair. Fran, the Republicans voted for Trump. And the Democrats.
Well, not all of them.
And, well, no. And no, but the, overwhelmingly, they did. Overwhelmingly, they
and
did.
Still support him now.
So, you know, so what you're saying, I don't know how to say
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I think Republicans are aliens. I hate what you just said, Fran. You're right. I don't understand it.
I don't think they're aliens, so maybe we disagree on that one.
Yeah, no, seriously, though, they feel disenfranchised? Why? How? And how more so than Democrats who still manage not to vote for cruel policies and mm-hmm. anti-democratic leaders.
So either you're racist or you're not. So the question is, which pot do you fall into? And if, in fact, we see this vast group of Republicans, not all Republicans, of course, I want to be very quick to say that, but there's got to be a reason that so many Republicans are embracing what are basically the anti-small-D Democratic racist policies that are being put out
well,
there.
One of the reasons is because of the information that is on the Internet that they read and that perhaps at some point in time in this history would not have been as widely disseminated as the Internet enables it to be. And they also, many of them, watch Fox News, which regurgitates these conspiracy theories. The Democrats are the boogeyman, et cetera. And we know from research that a lot of the people we're talking about here are, in fact, white men. Not college graduates, and they look around and they don't recognize the country that they grew up in, and many of them respond, "Well, I've got to figure out a way that I can continue to keep pace with this country," and unfortunately, many more are saying, "There's something wrong with this country. We got to do something about it," and in many cases, that means violence.
Can I say I've been a critic of Kathy Hochul, and I want to give her praise now. I think her response to what's happened in Buffalo is interesting and encouraging. First, she's taking a look at the red flag law, which doesn't work. She signed an executive order saying that it's no longer just an option for police officers or law enforcement. It's a requirement now. You have to invoke it.
And will you
second,
explain it?
That's it. Like when you have a person like the Gendron in mm-hmm. Buffalo who has shown signs, made threats or written weird stuff, sets up a red flag. Well, something's wrong with this guy. There's a racist problem here. You have to refer him. You have to take action to deal with those issues. I think that's really important. She also has the Attorney General looking into the technology, the Internet, 4chan, the platform that this guy used and that has fomented other problems. I think that's really interesting. I hope she picks someone who's tech savvy. Friend, maybe you could do that. Take a look at how that led
to
what happened.
Yeah, because I don't already have a job here.
Add it to the list, Fran.
Her business card's on an iPad.
But the problem with that, Rosemary, is the guy put up live stream video
right
on a smaller site, and it was taken down quickly. However, during the time that it was up, I don't know, maybe just 2 minutes, somebody copied it, and it was everywhere.
And yeah. then millions have seen it since. Yes.
Even though there's sort of content, you know, content providers have tried to take it down, but it's everywhere. And
right.
so there's
right.
two questions to ask, you know, like, what do we do to figure out, you know, how to get these platforms or how to use platforms that are more reliable? And there's actually an answer to that. My colleague, Ethan Zuckerman, who is in Europe right now talking to people about this very same issue, advocates that there be, you know, think C-SPAN, a publicly funded internet or a publicly funded, you know, dissemination platform that actually has rules and standards and moderation and, you know, that's sort of better than the others. So those are things that Ethan is thinking about. I hope I haven't gotten this wrong. But the other piece is it's us, too. You know, who's watching that stuff? Because I will tell you that just personally, I don't watch that stuff. I don't really want to see people being killed. I don't. And if somebody said, here's a link, if somebody, you know, I would not watch it. And
yeah.
So part of it is it's like, you know, what goes in the news, and we can blame the media all we like, but we're the ones clicking that. You know, if you don't want to see Kardashians, don't look at the link. And I do think that we have some culpability as a people in this, in terms of, you know, what we do to help make a profit for these companies. And to me, you know, I wonder, you know, why are there millions of people clicking on this? And
you know,
that I really don't understand.
You know, it was I still to this moment have not watched the George Floyd video. I just can't bring myself to watch it.
I haven't either.
I know many people have. I have not been able to watch it. I wouldn't be able to watch this. But one of the things that I find interesting about this, and there was an article in the Washington Post, Fran, about this very subject of the fact that you're live streaming it and 20 people are getting it, and then of course it gets copied and it goes to millions of people. But this is the thing that these companies, the tech companies, the world's biggest tech companies, said that they were going to try to avoid happening, so that a terrorist video wouldn't be readily available to people. And it's been 3 years since Christchurch, New Zealand. And when a lot of that was brought up of saying, okay, we have to do something to prevent that from happening again. So, like, what's the time frame? I mean, is it, you know this better, I ask you this, does it take 3 years to figure it out, or is it just that that's not on the radar?
It's definitely on the radar, but, you know, imagine, I mean, it's really hard. And, you know, it's not like everybody has an answer and it's just too expensive, but we actually know exactly what to do. You know, imagine you are standing in front of, you know, I don't know, 50 million people at the Washington Monument. How do you know what each of them is doing? You know, how do you figure that out? How many people can you get, or AI, you know, algorithms can you get that actually figures out? I mean, there's lots of surveillance, true. But that actually figure out what they're doing, and more importantly, what the intent is. What is the difference, many differences, between this video and, you know, a video you shot of Macbeth, and where people are getting killed, but they're pretend getting killed? How do we know what's pretend? How do we know what's real? And so you've got these tech companies who are clearly trying to make a profit as fast as they can, who are you know, run by people who have business in mind, who aren't the best organizations you ever thought of. And they're trying to figure out something that is nearly impossible to figure out. I mean, it's really hard to figure out intent. It's really hard to identify everything when you have billions of customers. you know, it's really hard to get this stuff off if, you know, there's a picture of a nude and it offends one person and it doesn't offend another. Is it art? Is it not? Is it pornography? Is it not? You know, there are all of these very subtle nuances in actually trying to figure this stuff out. So, you know, they haven't figured it out in 3 years. I don't know, you know, what will it take to figure out? And, you know, you really have to change the entire structure about, you know, who can say what and how it gets vetted. And, you know, and can we even sort of figure out, and maybe you just don't use it for certain kinds of things. So, yes, there's lots of blame that should go to the tech industry for this kind of stuff. But, you know, it's like splitting the atom. We now have an innovation that is so powerful, it's hard for us to get on top of it.
I got to get
and,
under the table.
I mean, all of us.
I'm going to get under the table. Rosemary's going to explode.
No. Yeah. No, not true.
Okay, I'll get under with you. I mean, it scares me just as much as it scares everybody else. And I'm, you know, ostensibly a professional computer scientist. So, you know, it does. I find it very scary.
You know, there's so much sociological stuff here that defies our understanding of what's really going on. When I worked with the New York City Police Department all those years ago, I was riding around on a tour with a group of two officers, and one saw some people standing on the corner, and said, "See, doctor, there's a crime waiting to happen." So that, you know, police departments are infected for all these reasons with this kind of racism. And when we say a red flag law in which we have to take a look mm-hmm. at what's happening, that's very, very important. Who's mm-hmm. taking the look?
Mm-hmm. And by the way, you came back to the red flag law, which is where Rosemary started. I agree with you. I think the governor is doing a very good job with that and other things. When she came into office replacing Cuomo, I figured she was just going to be a placeholder, and I'm not so sure that's the case. She's obviously the favorite to be elected, but I think she's earned it right now.
Well, pause there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our segment and our time together. We welcome you to write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll return after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. It is the 19th of May, 35 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we thank you very much for being with us. We just want to make note, and we've gotten a couple letters from this of people letting us know, and which we have known. Our Libby Post has done a tremendous amount of work, and I would just like to first of all, Ken Screven passed away. He was a longtime fixture in the media scene here in Albany. He worked for WRGB for decades, was a terrific reporter, a very nice guy. I remember when I first came to town, he was one of the people who showed me around and kind of pointed me into the direction of what where I should go. And he retired fair number of years ago, and has been in ill health. And Libby, to her great credit and to a group of people who have worked very hard to try to get him proper treatment. And I saw on Libby's Facebook page yesterday that Ken had passed away. And they're still working out the arrangements. But we just wanted to say that we were very sorry to hear it and to rest in peace. And obviously someone, Alan, I know you worked with him for a long time when you were at Channel 6. Mm-hmm. And is someone who was really a name in this region, but I think one of our first, if not the first, African-American to work in our local market on television, on air. And really was somebody that a lot of us respected and admired, and it was sad to see that he passed. So we will. I know the newsroom has been doing stories on this as well, but we just wanted to say our regrets.
You know, Joe, I was in the Channel 6 bureau with him virtually every evening because I was on every night. And he was sagacious. He knew it a great deal, and he was a good man.
I do remember when we were covering when Okay, this is going to be a weird story.
I love when you start that way.
Okay. When the cult brought the Dalai Lama to Albany.
Sounds like the name of a book.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When NXIVM brought...
Anything that starts out like that is a great story.
All right. So when they brought... that, when the cult brought the Dalai Lama to Albany, they had a press conference with the Dalai Lama, and a few of us were invited to go to the press conference. I was one. Ken was one. And there was a point at the end where Ken handed me a camera and said, will you take a picture of me and the Dalai Lama? And I said, only if you take a picture of me with the Dalai Lama. And that's exactly what happened. And I still have mine on my desk. But I also have the picture of Ken with the Dalai Lama. And it's really beautiful and very, very cool. You know, besides the cult stuff and behind and how we later found out the Dalai Lama get here, you can't get into this too much. Libby just texted me and said he was the first African American in our region on the air. So, and again, thanks to Libby for the beautiful work that she's done on making. I mean, it was a tough struggle at the end for Ken, and she tried to make that as easier as possible with a lot of other people and started a lot of great efforts. So our thanks to her, and of course our great regrets to hear about Ken. We only have a few minutes left, so let's go to a couple of things here. I want to go to a couple of letters, and then we'll move on to one more subject, and then we'll be done. Robert says, I cannot watch these videos, but remember that Emmett Till's mother insisted on having an open casket. Mm-hmm. Had she not done that, very few people would have ever heard of Emmett Till. Maybe if photos of people slaughtered by these weapons of war were shared with the public, our elected representatives would actually do something about the absurd proliferation of these guns. Nothing else has worked.
Well, some of the news media, Joe, has been talking about some of the people who were killed during this time. And I think when you put that name and face together for people to understand that these are people we're talking about, it becomes a very important function of journalism. What do you think, Rosemary?
Yeah, I worked for a time in Algeria, which has had a terrible problem with terrorism. And the newspapers there ran extremely graphic pictures of the victims of this terrorism.
Right.
Shredded babies and gutted teenagers were routine, and it turned off people. Women simply stopped buying the newspaper and wouldn't look at it. And yet, when I see here where the coverage is sort of sanitized, mm-hmm. it's become kind of a formula that we write about the people who died. Oh, you know, she was a churchgoer, and it people they just get desensitized to it. I don't know what the answer is. I think that our coverage of these mass killings is formulaic, but I have no great suggestions on what else we should or could be doing. And it leads to conspiracy theories, I think.
Well, also, I mean, we've been seeing, at least on many of the cable networks, you see the most gruesome, awful video coming out of Ukraine
mm-hmm.
every night. And yeah. But, again, you get sort of...
Yeah.
I mean, to the point where it says you be prepared for graphic images, and you don't even think of, oh, okay, this is something I should actually.
Yeah.
Because they just show it, and they show it over and over and over and
over
again.
People have gotten desensitized. A lot of people have gotten desensitized to it because of what they see in the movies or on TV. It's, you know, shoot 'em ups and blood are common in our living rooms.
It was like what Frank was saying. How do you distinguish between the realness and, you know, fake?
Yeah, but you know, to Alan's point about some of the interviews they're doing with survivors, the journalists have often been criticized for when they're out trying to do these stories. You know, when you knock on the door and say, you're very sorry that your son was killed, how do you feel? Well, sometimes people are not ready to talk about it and will slam the door in the journalist's face, which is fine, and journalists will be castigated mm-hmm. for doing that. On the other hand, there are a lot of people who want to talk about the victim and what they met in their lives, and these are stories that people can relate to and want to hear.
Right.
I also think there's a big difference between here and there. I mean, if something happens in Ukraine, yes, I mean, it's terribly important, and you, all your sympathy can go out to whoever's been affected. But if it happens here at a Buffalo supermarket, it's a lot closer, and I think very important.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's go to more letters. Fran, is there anything you wanted to say on that before we move on?
No, I mean, it's the same as, well, it's not the same, but, it, you know, it's similar to, you know, these videos. It's, you know, how do we take these things seriously? One thing that, you know, when we report on a war, you know, remember Desert Storm? It always struck me that, like, it had its own theme music. Right? When people reported on Desert Storm, there was like this theme music and, yeah. You know, this, you know, it was like it was a TV show. And, you know, in some sense, I do think we get, because of the content we see on TV and we choose to watch, you know, I do think we get desensitized to these things that happen. And, you know, boy, I'm really going for a flash from the past, but remember Twin Peaks?
Yes.
And it was like
good
an old
pie.
TV series.
Yes.
Yeah, but they spent the first bunch of episodes dealing with grief. Somebody had died, and it wasn't just that people were better 2 weeks later. You know, they really dealt with this intense grief, and then they went crazy about, you know, weird people and aliens and stuff. But, you know, in some sense, when we confuse real life and the stuff we see online, the stuff we see on TV, you know, it's, you know, I think it does desensitize us, and we have real life reactions to real life things, and it's kind of tragic.
We have about 3 or 4 minutes left. I want to just go through these letters. If there's anything any of you want to add to them, please do. This one from Sarah. Kudos to the panelists who focused on the internet sites and Fox News as key to understanding what is turning a segment of our population into far-right zealots and or white supremacists. Absolutely right. Now we as a society need to stop shrinking from this insight and deal with it. We go to Nils, who says, is anyone else afraid that it is mainly young men, white men, who are doing the shootings? It's not the old guys generally, but they are the pushers of the theory, feeding on the young, impressionable minds. These young minds are not necessarily Republicans or Democrats. They are discontent, they are disillusioned, and they are malleable. Then we got this from Harleen, who says, how we got to today? The white nationalists and neo-Nazis got organized during the Obama presidency with the help of Vladimir Putin, the Koch brothers, the Rifle Association, and Fox News. They put Trump in office. Mark says, we have to start calling out racism when we see it. It's not enough for African Americans to speak up because society is conditioned to ignore them. We all have to say something. Racism is part of our nation's history, and it's still around today. It's not just the crazy talk of a drunk uncle. Racism is also a political ideology. The Confederacy wanted a country based on it. The Dixiecrats wanted laws to support it. And today the Republicans tolerate it as a way to energize their base. Sadly, racism is alive and well, and it's time that we call it out. Pat says, no, Fran, the modern choice to vote Republican is either based on money or bigotry. Even Elon Musk, who used to be culturally a Democrat, has decided to support Republicans because he wants to preserve all of his wealth. He also has been accused of racist management of his Tesla employees. We go to
Let me just point out, I am not defending Elon Musk for any of the crazy decisions he's making.
Fair enough. Yes, D says, Fran started the show with a statement, who doesn't want more money? In regards to the women's soccer players wanting more benefits, now she's lamenting that people don't care about the society and the greater good. I, for one, negotiated family health insurance in lieu of salary because I couldn't afford to pay taxes on salary and then pay for health insurance. You can't have it both ways. Then we got this from Mary. I think that the Republicans want these young racist men to know that once Republicans have total control, they will not be prosecuted for their crimes, even if they kill scores of people of color. And time for one more letter, I believe. We go to Neil. I'm going to suggest something that chills my First Amendment-loving heart. Shouldn't police or prosecutors be monitoring social media for people like the Buffalo shooter who post their plans for mass murder and stop them before they start shooting, which was something certainly that Fran addressed earlier in the program. I want to thank you all for being with us and for being a part and for writing to us. We appreciate it. Alan, thank you very much. Be well.
Always a pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you. Fran, be well. Have fun in Northampton. And
Hey, it's so sunny here, too.
Enjoy
bye
it.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Yeah. And to Ira and Rosemary, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Rosemary, stop giving me that look. You're listening to the Red Table on WAMC.
Watch that.